All right, welcome to the Casey catch-up. It's been a little while, but had a few races happen recently, and Nick basically kicked our asses. So I thought, you know what, Nick, we got to get him on the podcast, and I want to learn more about Nick. So I feel like podcasts are the best way to get to know people. So Nick, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Casey catch-up.
Thanks for having me, James. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's it's been a long time coming. You've had a few like sort of smoky results, like in the local races over in Hawaii. You know, you've beaten, you know, Andrew and Edo and the boys that did really well in the Koa Kai. And we're just chatting, and Josh was saying to look out for you because you're coming over for the Northern Beaches race. And to be completely honest, I was like, yeah, Nick, I can see how he can be good, but Andrew's got the runs on the board. He's going to be the guy to watch. You showed me wrong. You know, you showed everyone wrong, and you actually smoked us. Like, there was literally daylight between you and then the rest of the pack fighting for the podium. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't even know when you started foiling. So do you want to give us a bit of a background about yourself and how you got into it?
Yeah. So a little background. Obviously, I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii, but I didn't surf much growing up. I actually, in high school and in college, I ran track and played football. I was the quarterback for my high school and my college, and ran track. I pole vaulted. I didn't have a huge background in the ocean. My dad would take me surfing, you know, over summer, but I didn't spend a lot of time in the water. I was actually not the best surfer. And I started surfing every day during COVID. Obviously, there's nothing else to do, so we were out in the ocean all the time. So I picked up surfing. I stopped football because, you know, obviously we weren't at college, and I went to school in California, Los Angeles, but that's when I picked up surfing. And, you know, the surf isn't always good. So I saw Jack Ho on his little like hoverboard, and I was like, whoa, what is that thing? So I'd go out with my sisters every day, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go pick up one of these. So I picked up one on Facebook Marketplace for a couple hundred bucks. And I just immediately was like, this is the coolest thing ever. So every day for months, I just grinded and just learned how to foil. But yeah, I didn't have a big background in surfing. I mean, I'd like to think I'm athletic, but yeah, that's when I started foiling, and I haven't looked back.
So how far along, like how good a surfer were you? You know, because, you know, I get people that, you know, I've never surfed before and they want to learn to prone foil, and I kind of steer them away from it. So were you able to catch waves and go across the wave?
Yeah. I was able to do that. But I mean, if you saw me paddle out on the North Shore with a shortboard, you'd be like, oh, this guy's pretty new. You know, I can't hit crazy turns or do anything super nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can handle myself in the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I guess, good for people to know, because people are like, I've never surfed before. And you learnt via surf foil. Like, a lot of people learn via wing foil or e-foil, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's so many different avenues to get into foiling, but surf foiling was your entry. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, my dad actually,
tell us what equipment you were using. Like, what was that first marketplace setup?
I don't even know the board name. It was some $200 like bar of soap. It was probably about 45 liters and 5 feet long, bright neon. And then I had a code foil. And I'm not sorry, not code. I'm sorry, sorry. Cloud nice. Nine. Cloud nine. Sorry, I was thinking. Yeah. I had a cloud nine foil.
Yeah.
So it was some Pelican or Pel. I forget. It was a really old. It looked like a semicircle, an entire half of a circle. And I thought it was the coolest thing at the time, but you look at it now and it would be the slowest thing in the water.
Yeah. I'd actually love to get, I've got it. I've got my first, the GoFoil Kai that I like originally bought, in the garage. And I sort of have it hanging up as a bit of a mantelpiece, cause like that's what got me into it. And, I'm going to use it again one day, but I just don't want to, you know, cause everything's come so far. But it'd be good to have like a, you know, like in the surfing, they have like the old school sort of boards, like a twin fin or single fin comps. It'd be really cool, I reckon, to run like a foil comp that was like prior to 2020, you know.
Yeah, if you can find any of those wings these days.
I know, right? Yeah. They'd be like collector's editions at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay, so you learned to surf foil, you know, you learned to foil via surf foiling, and then when did the downwind foil thing happen?
Yeah. So yeah, obviously Jack was my main guy that brought me into this world, but I picked up a 6.0 flight board, and it's in Hawaii. It's just like boxy rails, 6-foot board, 90 liters. And I just started paddling around in Waikiki, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. This is like pretty easy. And Jack wanted to send a Hawaii Kai run one day. And I think I had just gotten the Lift 170 high aspect, and that flight board that also looked like a bar of soap, you know, it didn't even move in the water, and you'd paddle and it would just spin in a circle. Oh. And I would sink it actually if I was just standing still. So you kind of had to paddle and get going and pop up, and none of us knew what we were doing. But that was like 2021. We thought we were pioneers of the sport, because like only Simeon and like only a few of us had sent a Hawaii Kai run.
Yeah.
And we thought it was like, we said a little prayer at China Walls before we sent, and we were like, okay, we got Simeon on the ski, like just in case something happens. And we were super nervous, but yeah, that's how we got into it in like 2021. And then,
yeah. Awesome. So yeah, it's amazing how far board designs come to, right? Like, you know, around that same time, I think I was using like a 6.0 by 24, you know, and that, like, if you look at that now, one, it's super short, but also super wide. As you said, it's like a bar of soap. It's just like, it's a plug to paddle. But once up, I guess it kind of worked. And I feel like the boards matched the foils. The foils were slow, so the boards didn't have to be so fast. Yeah. You know, it was much harder then. Everyone who's learning now, it's gotten easier. But tell us about your learning journey. How long did it take? How was that first run?
Yeah, it took a long time for sure. I think my first run was 3+ hours, and you could probably lay down and paddle that in 3 hours, maybe less than 3 hours. So yeah. I would sit there and just, you know, you'd get exhausted. I don't know how your learning process was, but I would, you know, struggle to get up and sit there and just go and just be just physically exhausted. It was super hard to get up when I first started. It was, I mean, for everybody, it's like a really demanding sport to have a pop up.
Yeah. I think like we're just discussing the boards prevented us from that sleek the entry. Like we couldn't get up. Like I remember the first proper run I had was on it was actually on one of those square boards, like a blown up version of the Tomo, you know, like they look like an iron.
I think Kalama had a board like that too.
And I was using the Kai foil, and it basically the foil was too small, the board was too small, and the conditions weren't enough, you know. So even now I think I'd struggle to paddle that setup up, you know, like, and I think equipment's come so far, but also our knowledge of what works and what doesn't has come so far just from trial and error. So,
and I think the people that learned on those older setups have an advantage now, because they were, you know, they were training on plugs, and now to have a 8-foot board that can glide through the water is like, wow, this is, you know, night and day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes and no. I think it's almost a different sport, but yeah, I think that having the background doesn't hurt. We've struggled, you know. And then, so you're on the Lift 170, and so you're now sponsored by Lift. So it's like it all kind of through COVID, then you were training up. You know, I know a lot of the Voyager boys were sort of looking at Molokai to Oahu was like that big race. When was your first race?
The Molokai was 2023 was my first one.
Ever. Yeah. So straight in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say I'm pretty new to the sport and understanding the tides, the currents, the winds, you know, as a Hawaiian, you know, you kind of know the water, and as a waterman, you kind of learn all that stuff as you go. But that was brand new to me.
Yeah. And had you done any like ocean races? Cause you've done a bit of triathlon too, you are now.
Yeah. Yeah. I do a lot of triathlon training. So biking, swimming, and running obviously, but no ocean races besides those short swims.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Do you think the swimming helps you understand, or you think swimming, it's just so different?
No, it's so different. You're just swimming in like a lake or like some body of water that the currents and the tides have nothing to do with the race. Yeah. You know, you don't have to understand what's going on or switch gear or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, like, so looking back at 2023 M2O, how did you go? Like, what was your race like for, you know, that was the original course, I guess.
Yeah, that was, I didn't make it out to the wind line in one pump. So I was using the Lift 150. I popped up right away and was pumping as far as I could. Came down exhausted, had to rest for a little bit, probably fell about 3 or 4 times. And then, made it to the wall and paddled the rest of the way, probably like everybody else. But it was just like, I had no idea what to expect. I was like in the dark, you know, I didn't even do a practice run over there, or I was only doing Hawaii Kai runs or things like that. So it was brand new to me. And it was exciting to be part of it. I forget what I finished, but I was just stoked to be, you know, part of it and part of the crew. And, you know, it's just a big accomplishment, especially
for sure, like,
stepping into it. So,
yeah, especially for being like your first ever race. It's like the Kona Ironman, you know, for your first triathlon.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a huge step. And, with training Hawaii Kai, how did you find like the middle of the channel? And you said you came down a few times at the start, and then did you make it all the way to China Wall without coming down?
Yeah, the second half of the race, I think I fell a couple times just because they're different. The bumps are definitely different. Mm. There's way more energy. I would say I spend 90% of my time at Hawaii Kai, so I have those bumps dialed and I know exactly where to go, what to do. Whereas when I was in the channel, I was like, it was a whole different, the bumps were coming. I'm goofy, so it was coming from behind me and I was confused on, you know, whether I keep working north or take these runners down south. And that's a big issue with a lot of my foiling is I'm in great shape. You know, I train really hard and understand that, but just my foiling ability, you know, surf foiling and maximizing efficiency on the foil is, I always need work on that. And that's what I've noticed even in 2024. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll tell us about 2024. You obviously got a few more races under your belt and I think you won a few of the Oahu foil races, you know, with, you know, Edo and Andrew, you know, competing and you won that Oahu foil series, which, you know, was like 8 or 9 races.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I won them. Edo didn't show up to a handful of them. Andrew didn't show up to a few. I think I was one of the few foilers that went to most of them. So that's why I don't want to discredit those two guys. Those guys are the man. But I think it was the same issue. I had popped up and the bumps were firing and I just got a little, I was always hesitant on where to make my line. And I had a hard time picking a line and sticking with it. I was always working north and I was too far north or, you know, and then I took too many runners south and I felt lost out there. I was just like trying to survive and I was like figuring out where to go. And I was in great shape, but I was fine. I made it to the finish. I was fine. Wasn't even tired, but it was more about like just not maximizing my foil efficiency. And like, that's what I tell everybody now too. Everybody who's getting into it, they want to train super hard for the Molkai. And I was like, if you don't fall, you're going to save so much energy. Just work on like understanding how to foil and like understanding how it works and how to maximize efficiency, which is like the coolest thing that I'm like diving into now. Yeah. But if you can pop up right away and not fall and pump to the finish, you're going to beat 75% of the competition. Yeah. I don't know if you agree with that.
I totally agree on that. Yeah. It's like, and 75%, I think you're right. But then there's, you know, I think Edo and Andrew and yourself now, like you've shown that, look, there's one thing finishing and being up on foil, but then there's pushing the foil that you're on to the limit. And so that's cardio, but also skills reading it. And it's, if you choose too big a foil, you won't be in the race to win, I don't think anymore.
Yeah.
If you're too conservative, like you can't be defensive on your foil choice or your line choice anymore. Whereas 2023, I was on the 860, like it's pretty much the same as the 150 lift, like size wise. And it's like, if I used the 860 last year, like I wouldn't have even come in the top 30, I don't think. You know, like it was, everyone was pushing it so hard cardio wise, but also everyone's skills are up a huge level. So I don't know, what did you use for, I assume you used the 110 for.
Yeah, I did use the 110 and it was fine. It was really good conditions when we had that race. So we made it to the finish, no problem. And once I hit Oahu, I was like, I took a deep breath. I was like, okay, this is like what I'm comfortable with. And I mowed down a handful of guys, but I was just far behind at the beginning. So I did a lot of catching up.
Did you get stuck in some of that boat wash at the start?
Yeah, I did. I don't know what the solution is. You know, I'm going to complain about the boats as well, but I don't know what a better solution is to that. But yeah, I got caught behind a handful of boats and, you know, it's mushing up all of the energy and it's a lot harder to read. And, you know, you try to get around it and then you lose a lot of time going too far north or too far south. So yeah, I did both years. I actually got waked out 2023 and 2024. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just got to get up faster and foil faster, I guess.
Better starts, isn't it? It's honestly, I think like I had a good start 2024, and I still like I was probably top 15, top 20, like, but there were still boats. Like I had to go really fast south to avoid the boats, and that sort of set me up for the entire run, which it wasn't a bad, it was fine. But because it was a good direct, wind was good last year. It didn't matter. But yeah, the boats is, a lot of people have discussed it, and I haven't heard too much from the Molokai to our organisers about it. But it's sort of this thing where, you know, there's been more competitors than what we had, like in the SUP and prone races. But the difference, I believe, is that the foils are going so much faster. The boats are having to drive faster, which means the wake is like triple as bad, you know? So
yeah,
personally, I didn't find the boats too bad in 23. I had Oscar's boat in front of me, which I was pissed at. I was like, got super angry about at one point. And then this year I had, I can't remember who, I had a bunch of boats in front, but there is an aspect that that's a part of that race because escort boats can't just disappear. But a lot of people have talked about it, like washing machine style conditions and boats cutting them off, boats coming into them, like at them, coming from the finish. So what's been the discussion? Like, you know, it's your hometown, you know, what's been the discussion on the ground about the solution, or is there even a discussion on it?
Yeah, well, I guess there's two parts to it. And the first one is like the growth of the sport first, you know. I think there's 100 competitors. There's probably going to be a couple hundred. You know, and you cannot have a couple hundred boats jamming through Molokai. First of all, Molokai people aren't going to like that. You can't be foiling through a couple hundred boats going 18 to 24 knots to catch up to the competitors. You know, that's not fair to most of the competitors. And then, you know, it's almost, there could be a danger aspect as well. And you're out there foiling and the seas are maybe 5 feet, you know, a couple meters, and you might not see the foiler in front of you, and the foiler falls and you could run them over. And, you know, that might not be a big deal, but a lot of these boat captains, they don't know foiling, you know, they're fishermen, they're, you know, watermen that may not understand like how fast foiling is and how different it is from paddling. So like you could fall and then be half a mile away from somebody, or a boat behind could run right up on you. So the discussion, you know, I'm probably not the right person to talk about, is having 26 boats or 30 boats, for example, which would cut down, you know, by one third at least, and then putting them at each mile marker on the south side. And that's if we have standard trade winds, but putting them on the south side. So every mile you're going to see a boat and there's going to be a check-in or something. But yeah, I don't know. That might not be the best solution because people are going to want photographers and filmers and, you know, live stream, you know, people want to be a part of the event, and that's not going to help the event. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if you have a better idea.
No, similar, like I've discussed it with a few people and similar thing, like you could have, like you said, boats like on the run line, you know, like, and they could be every mile, you know, and that's, or you could have like a fleet of boats on the north side, a fleet of boats on the south side, and then, you know, front and back. So picking up the back markers and picking up the front markers. And I totally agree with the media thing. Like there's going to be guys like I had a filmer on my boat this year, and
same.
And so like it's brands want the content, like it's costing a lot, so they want something out of it. And to grow the sport, we need to sort of showcase it, and maybe that's not an option. And I think Mola, the event could do a better job at media, and if there was a media boat, maybe that would mean we didn't all need our own personal media boats, or a couple, you know, and maybe that's a way to sort of to prevent that, because if everyone wanted to be filmed, but we're back to the same problem, you know, there's now, you know, 50 boats following all the, you know, the foiling, like the sponsored riders, and, you know, and then they probably don't need escorts compared to the backmarkers who do need escorts in terms of, you know, safety wise, they're out there for longer. And I don't think I feel for the event, because it's a lose-lose situation. Yeah, they take the boats away, they're compromising safety. They keep the boats there, they're compromising safety. So it's a really tricky one.
Yeah, I don't know. If someone has a better solution, speak up, because I don't know either. It's a lose-lose, yeah.
I heard a rumor that they're thinking about, like, to avoid the oncoming boat traffic at the end, they're looking at moving it back to the old finish, but maybe finishing like further out, just because there is a harbor there, the boats can just sort of, you know, at Hawaii Kai, they can go to the, they're not getting in, they're not going to be driving at people, you know, like they did 24. But I guess we'll keep our ear to the ground and see what happens. But it's an interesting one, I think, because it's not an easy solution.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's fast forward, and actually, I want to talk to you about your training, because obviously, you know, bike, run, swim, quarterback, you know, in American football, and you know, so how have you taken all of that stuff? And are you okay? Two questions. One, how are you using that to train? And the second one is, are you incorporating foiling for like your cardio side of training, or more just your skills side of training?
Yeah, I think foiling is more the skill side. It's always the skill side for me. I do push hard foiling, but I think it's such a short duration of time. Maybe I do a Hawaii Kai run, maybe I do like a Allen Davis run, and it's 30 to 40 minutes max. Whereas if I'm on the bike, I'm on the bike for a couple of hours, you know, in zone two, or, you know, running, you know, 10 plus miles at that same zone two. So, and doing some speed work. And when I'm on the foil, I'm always trying to, like I said before, maximize efficiency and like understand like, oh, how the bumps are working, and okay, I need to be riding like as high as I can and as clean as I can, versus, when I'm training, it's 100% about tracking my heart rate, my speed, my output, and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, really interesting. I'm just diving into this stuff now, and I've been trying to replicate like a bike session, but on the water, and it's really hard to do in a downwind scenario, because if the bumps are good, it's like hard to get your heart rate high. You know, you've almost got to go up like crosswind or upwind to get your heart rate like to spike, if you're doing like an interval session. Whereas on the bike, I just did a stationary bike session last night, and you know, it was like six sets of 5 minutes, and like a like functional threshold kind of stuff. And like it was the hardest session, you know, it was so hard, because you don't have that controlled environment when we foil. So you're doing most of your cardio stuff on the bike, and then when you're foiling, it's almost skills/fun, you know, is that how you?
Yeah, 100%. And at like 2024, the biggest mistake I made was training so hard on land. And on land, I was training so hard. I was like, I felt I was in like the best shape of my life. I was running super fast and, you know, lifting a lot. And I felt like, okay, I'm ready for these races. And then I would get out there and I just underperformed on foil. And I was, you know, like I said, I was fine, but I was just, like physically I was fine, but yeah, my biggest shift to training this year has been foiling, just going out and either surf foiling or downwinding, like a lot of times I would choose, you know, I enjoy running and I enjoy biking, and I love just sitting on the bike, listening to my AirPods or listening to something. And this year I'm like, okay, I need to go out and like surf foil. I need to like go and do something. And I'm always thinking about something to improve on my surf foiling this year, rather than like just having fun. I'm like always trying to ride it high, always trying to, you know, carve right at the most energy powerful spot. Yep. And that's been the biggest difference, I think, this year.
Yeah. Well, I think it's already paying off. What was I going to ask? Strength stuff. So you mentioned like sort of gym stuff too. So I don't know, people are going to ask like, so you're doing zone two and kind of like your speed work on your bike and running. And then what are you doing in the gym?
I just lift like once or twice a week. I mean, nothing special, just like just 3 to 4 sets of 10 of, you know, chest, back, legs, squats, nothing fancy.
Like, yeah. It's just doing it, you know, lifting heavy stuff. And they reckon that, but there's been a lot of advice. In Maui, there's like an older crew of kiters that my sort of parents used to be a part of. And they were like 70 and 80 year olds that were kiting every day. And I was like, so impressed, you know, they're like literally my grandparents' age and they were doing like learning new sports. I'm like, what's the trick? And they're like, we ride our bike every day and we lift weights every day. I'm like, you guys lift weights? Like this old dude, you know, he's like doing like squats and bench press. And I'm like, man, it's like the fountain of youth is in the gym somehow.
Yeah, it's important at that age to lift. I forget someone told me, but it is really important, I think, to lift at that age.
That's good, I guess, for all of us. You know, I think it's also important for foilers to be doing some not necessarily lifting super heavy, but like just doing some maintenance sort of stuff in the gym, because I don't know about you, Nick, but like I'm natural foot and it's really easy to be lopsided or really asymmetrical just by foiling, you know.
When I started biking, or when I started foiling, I noticed my biking was a lot stronger on one leg than the other. It was a significant drawback. I was like, oh my God, this is like my left leg is exhausted.
Yeah.
My back leg, or other way around. Yeah.
Surfers talk about like, you know, asymmetrical body types, and they're only really riding waves for, you know, really good waves, like a minute. Whereas on foil, we're on foil for hours for races and training for, you know, 30, 40 minutes to an hour. And that's like riding away for that long. So I think a bit of maintenance stuff's important just to keep us. So we're not walking
stay
around.
Balanced.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about, before we go to the Northern Beaches race, I want to talk about, so the Oahu Fall races, you won the series, and I'm giving it to you because you got to show up to get the points. But did you race? Were there races that you beat Edo and Andrew? I thought there was at least one that you got. Have you beaten Edo before? No one beat him.
No, I don't think before. I don't think I've beat Edo before. Yeah, I might have beaten Andrew on a few of them, but I mean, yeah, I think we're all testing gear, you know. I wouldn't say we just, you know, that's not a prime time season race. It's you know, trying different wings, different things, and different lines. But
interesting. So it's a great way to, I love that the community, like there's more and more of these races that are sort of community led, and you know, John Hearn's such a legend, and Simeon and Jeff who ran the Voyager race as well. It's cool that these races are happening, and I hope that they kind of grow. And the one issue I guess I have with John Hearn's races, which is just because I don't live there, is that if the conditions aren't considered good enough, the race isn't on. And it's hard for, like, say I wanted to fly in for a race, and if I got there and it was, you know, cancelled because the conditions were no good, it's like, I just think, well, what do you think about that? Like, do you think moving forward, we're going to have to keep this sort of moving window, and there's going to be sort of local races, or do you think there's going to be more sort of, you know,
I would think, I mean, again, I don't know much, but I assume it would be similar to the WSL. Like they wouldn't run pipeline if it's 1 foot, you know, like that's not what the audience wants to see. That's not like the exciting, famous pipeline. That's,
yeah,
you know, 1 foot. I assume that's what they would do. And if the wind was going offshore or going, you know, not existent,
yeah,
you know, 1 to 2 knots, I don't know. What do you think we should do? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the WSL's got a waiting period, right? So I think that's one way they've sort of created a solution for it. But there's plenty of WSL events that like don't run because of so there's plenty of WSL conditions that do run in very subpar conditions. And like,
yeah,
I know, like growing up, I used to watch Bells all the time. And sometimes they wouldn't even run at Bells. They'd have to run at Winky, and other times they'd have to go all the way down the coast to 13th Beach. And it's like a beach break, and it's, you know, pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on the size of the race. And I think the beauty of the local races is that they can be, like, locals don't want to sign up for a race if it's going to be 5 knots when the next day is going to be 30. So it's like,
yeah,
why would you do that? But to grow the sport, I think that like a waiting period is good, and you can only create a waiting period so big for certain events. But like backup options, like, so changing the location of the race to make it better, or changing the, instead of being a downwind race, like in, I was really interested. So you went to Crozon too, right? For the foil?
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, you're probably glad you didn't.
Yeah. No, I heard about it. Yeah. Everyone told me about it.
Yeah. So, they ran in the bay, which like for us here in Sydney, like we got lots of bays, like sort of harbors.
Yeah.
But it has to be like 30 knots to, or 25 knots plus to be considered doing a run in the bay. The ocean, you can do a run in 5 knots as long as there's swell, waves, you know. And yeah, I think they missed an opportunity there. Like they could have run maybe not even a down the coast run, but like a we all, when we surf all, we all pump it out and, you know, connect waves and pump out and connect waves. Why couldn't you do a sup fall race in the surf where you start like beyond the breakers and then sort of go around a marker, pump back out and do laps of that? I think that'd be kind of a better option than a 5 knot flat water race.
Yeah. I mean, it would be, that wouldn't be considered a downwind race. No. I would assume. Yeah. That's just a different discipline.
Like a surf race, yeah, almost, but I think it's closer to downwind than flat water, like 5 knot flat water. I think, but yeah, it's a tricky one.
That would be a lot more, physically enduring. I mean, yeah, downwinding is just as hard too, but it's just it would just be a totally different event, I guess.
Yeah, it'd be different.
Don't they do that at Florida? They do some version of that
with the Florida. Difference with the Florida one, which I don't agree with. I haven't been there, but like from what I see, the beach start just eeks me. It's just like, why would you run? And like, it's almost like who can catch a wave first, who can get out first is the most likely to win. Whereas if you started from the outside, everyone's in like an even playing field in terms of you can catch a wave and like you can catch a bump. Everyone can catch a bump from the start, whereas running on the sand and then having to like find your way out through the waves and find a deep bit of water to paddle, just, I don't know, to me it doesn't seem as fair or even, I guess, for some reason.
Yeah, I assume that's why not as many people go to those races, just because it's, you know, it's not as fun as downwinding, I would assume.
I guess so the Northern Beaches race, moving to that now, like we set a weekend and we only had a two-day window, and the Josh and I and Lisa discussed like what are the options if we have no wind, and we've got a few reefs around our headland, and there was like a plan to do a basically from where we started back into where we paddled from, like doing heats of that, like having like four people and you just sort of pump in and use the swell and the energy. That was the backup plan. I know you came because the forecast looked good, which was awesome. Yeah. Yeah, but like for the rest of the people that, you know, I guess more for the locals and to have an event and to get people together, that was the plan, that we'd be doing like a down sweller, so to speak. Like we're catching swells and having to, you know, work our way into the shore. And our idea was heats. So you do like heats of, say there were 50 people entered, you do 10 heats of 5. And those, so the, you know, the top three would go through to the next stage or something, and you'd have a repercharge and I like that.
So it's just whoever catches the first wave pretty much would win, right?
Well, we wouldn't start in the surf. We'd start like outside the surf. So it'd be like a almost flat water paddle up. But, you know, in the ocean, there's bumps. So if you've got those bumps, you can catch. It's like a light wind downwind, but without being like with energy, with wave energy was the plan. But yeah, for sure, if you caught a good wave, you'd be quicker. But same in downwind races, if you get a good set of bumps, you're going to be quicker. That was the idea anyway. But it was just trying to come up with a solution or a backup plan should the wind not cooperate.
Yeah. I don't know. That's such a different event, you know. But it would be fun.
I just feel like it's going to happen again. Like there's going to be days where, like even like Molokai to Oahu is one day. The first year I did Molokai to Oahu, it was like a 6 to 8 foot south swell, and there was no wind. Like it was glassy. I was on a stand-up paddleboard and a bunch of the Hawaiian, like of the top 20 contenders, about 12 pulled out, you know, because it was just not what they trained for. Living in Hawaii, you get trade winds like, you know, in summer, like 6 out of 7 days, usually more. And then in winter, you get winds like sort of 2, 3, 4 days, you know, depending on the systems that are coming through. So like I can see coming from Hawaii how it'd be so hard to fathom a race without wind, but it can happen, you know.
What would you do on a day if the Molokai were happening and it was just dead winds?
I'd go. For me, flying over for it, and like having everything organized, it's like I'd do it. And I feel like
what would be your strategy, I guess?
Just
big wing and just pump the whole time. And
I think so. Like as small a wing as I could stay up the whole time, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, so like even last year I brought the 1075, like our biggest R wing, to Hawaii just in case the winds. I think I took it to Molokai too, because we went Maui, Molokai, Oahu, and then flew from Oahu home. So I had my biggest foil on Molokai in case the wind didn't show up. I'm glad I didn't use it because it was so windy. But I had a chat with Mackay Creative. What's his name?
Aaron
Evelyn. Yeah. And he was like, what if you had a headwind? And I'm like, oh, okay, headwind, probably we're not doing it. You know, 10 knots in upwind for 52 Ks. I don't think anyone's at that level yet, but or will ever want to be at that level yet, you know. But yeah. What would you do? So if there was no wind, but there were swells like running towards Molokai, like what would you ride? What would you be your strategy?
Yeah, I mean, if there was energy, I would go, obviously. But if it was a lake out there, and I mean, you probably might have a different answer, but I don't think I could pump my bigger lift wing 40 miles, you know, or 52 kilometers. So yeah. I would probably pull out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Would
you give it a try? Like, would you get your escort? Say we got our escorts there. Would you just go? And if you couldn't do it, you just jump on the boat.
Yeah, I would give it a try for sure. I mean, that channel funnels so much energy through there. So there's always a little bit of energy.
But
yeah. Yeah. I was talking about if there's almost headwinds and things like
that.
Yeah.
Headwind, from a competitor's standpoint, if there was a headwind, I'd hope the event switched the course, you know.
Yeah.
But I know, like,
there's a lot of rules on Molokai though that I don't know if we can
happen. You know?
Yeah.
Or even like just do a race on Oahu, you know, like I don't know, down the east coast or something, or down the like a Waikiki run. I don't know. But maybe they need a backup. The good thing is they haven't needed a backup plan because it's generally windy, but I know the Outrigger canoe race, I'm pretty sure they've raced before with like a headwind, like, which is, it's different because they can go slower without coming off foil. But yeah, let's hope it's a headwind. That's for sure. Northern Beaches race. Let's go back to that. So tell us about, you said you're training more on skills, this sort of since Molokai, and tell us about your experience in Australia, basically.
I loved it. Yeah, it was nice. That was my first time being in Australia, and the weather was not the best for visiting Australia, but was amazing for downwinding. So, you know, a little double-edged sword, but no, I had a lot of fun. The bumps were, you know, pretty similar to home. It was almost like an Alan Davis run with a little bit of backwash, big ground swell, and kind of coming at that side angle that, I don't know what you guys would call it, north, northeast or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty similar to home, good conditions. And I just can't believe how much good surf there is up the entire coast of Australia. I just want to get a van one day and drive up the coast and surf tons of different spots.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many little beaches and bays and, you know, point breaks all the way along the coast. And for sure, that's our strong point, I think. You know, the winds are, you got a pretty crazy, that's probably like the biggest storm we've had in summer. And it's more like a winter storm is what you experienced, where we had like, it was an East Coast low essentially. And it was basically, we had southerly winds for 4 or 5 days, which that's how long you were here for, right? Just, it was like a 5 day. So yeah, big swell, big wind and winter conditions essentially.
I was scared to send by myself because I didn't know where to go.
I think you landed, or the day after you landed, and Oscar, Josh and Perth had done one from Maroubra, and I joined them at Palm Beach to Palm Beach, and that day was actually pretty crazy. I was on the 600R, and like I was avoiding going down like the bombs. Anytime I went down like a fast one, I just blew up. Like it was, it wasn't so much because the swells were so big. It was because the swells were solid, but the wind was like a different direction at like 40 knots, like just like 5 degrees off, but the chops were running across and the swells were running like just slightly off angle, and you'd go down it and all of a sudden you get like speed wobbles from the bumps. Like it was funneling you faster and faster. It was nasty. Yeah. Yeah. It was, it wasn't like everyone who did that run except for Perth was like, that wasn't fun. Like that wasn't that wasn't enjoyable. It was just like, we're glad we finished and that we're all in one piece.
It was smaller the next day and I still felt that way.
Yeah.
The next day we all did a run. I was like, the 110 was too much.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was getting bucked off and same exact thing. The wind chop was coming at an angle and, you know, it would like almost double up and drop out. And then I couldn't bring my board down fast enough on the face. So I would explode and jump off and just cover my head.
Yeah, back to cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a wild couple of days. And then I think, tell us about the race. The race was, it was a bit different.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect conditions. It was exactly like I saw at home, you know, just like our home runs. And I was like, I felt a lot more comfortable that Sunday. And that Saturday I was like, well, that was my first time doing a run, obviously, in Sydney the day before. So I was more just mapping out the energy and I was going slow and I went way outside to see if it was way faster. You know, I was doing that and then I went way inside and then I wanted to see what the energy was like in there at the end. And then kind of detonated a few times. And then the day of the race was pretty similar, but smaller. So it was nicer to have a little more groomed bumps. And then, I thought it was good. Got up right away. Yeah, the end was backwashy for sure. But if you kind of power through those, it doesn't affect you as much.
Yeah. So. Yeah, tell us about that. So a lot of people at home here always talk about that backwash section. And I say the same thing as you. It's like the faster, the easier. So do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I would say it's like riding a bike. Like when you ride a bike slow, you're going to have a lot more wobbles and a lot more scares. You know, there's going to be a lot of smaller wind swells you're going to have to worry about. Whereas when you're firing down really fast, you only have to worry about the larger ground swell or the larger blocks of energy. And I tell a lot of people that, like, almost when they're learning, it's better to have a smaller wing because you can keep up with the cleaner bumps that are going in line in the right direction versus like all the small mumble jumbo that people try to foil on and struggle with on a slow wing.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I totally agree. And it's the smallest foil you can paddle up is the best option generally for a good day. I see a lot of people struggle on the big wings because of exactly that. They're reading all these like backwash and sidewash and wind chop jumble, whereas there's really nice groom stuff that's coming through that you can't tap into unless you're a small wing. So that's no good. Like the bike analogy. That's good.
Yeah. What wing did you ride the data race?
I rode like, it was a prototype, but it was a 680, somewhere between a 680 and 770. And it was perfect. There was no complaints. Like, I didn't make anything wrong, but through that backwash, I just like basically in that section, like I've done it all, it's my home run, so I know it, but like sometimes you just get like this epic sort of wedge that just like pushes you through that section, and there's backwash that comes because you're on this wedge, it like sort of paves the way and it makes it so nice and clean. And I got that at the very start of that section, and then about a third in, I just got this wedge that came at the wrong angle. It was more towards me than away from me, and it put me out of rhythm. And through that section, I actually lost two places. Oscar and Andrew overtook me about there. And I was like, you know, I ran the inside line, which is just what I always like. I like the inside line because I feel like there's more energy. The bumps are a little steeper is what I find. Maybe it's a little further distance, but I just like being powered up the whole time. And, yeah, the follow felt good, but I just lost my rhythm, you know, and you lose your rhythm with the ocean, and it's like in surf comps, you see like sometimes someone just paddles out the back and a set comes to them, and other times you can you're chasing it, you're chasing the rhythm, and you're running away. So my start was good, and then I lost it. We actually almost shared a bump together, and you went on the one behind, and that I feel like that bump that you got just like you were gone. I'm like, man, I should have pushed harder to get under that bump with him.
Yeah. I think I started working outside. We connected, I think, on a similar bump, right, with each other. And then I think I saw you go back inside, and I was like, okay, I'm going to just work where this bump is taking me out. Yeah. I think that's where we separated a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And that was the winning move. Like, you know, I lost a lot from there. It just sort of spiraled down for me. Like I felt, you know, when you're feeling like, you know, you feel fit, like you're feeling strong, but like the decisions, the skills or the options you're taking are just the wrong ones.
That's
what I thought. Yeah.
And then you mess up on one of those. Yeah. I mean, you have to slow down and reset and then jump on a slow bump. And then you're just like, you know, you're just frustrated. You had to lose that rhythm and.
Yeah. Like, and just, it's like.
Wait for the next big one to line up.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of just, I doubled down on going in, whereas probably had to work out, because going in I feel like I can keep my speed, whereas going out it's like you've got to work and you're losing a little bit of pace by working out because the swells are sort of pushing in. But yeah, you just took off, and like the outside line was the call, because you literally the results don't even show that, because you came in at the wrong spot. You know,
I don't know if people saw that. I didn't see. I saw bright red and yellow flags, so I just came into those, and I didn't see anybody around me, so I kind of just stopped for a second, and I was like, oh crap, it's way down the beach. So I had to run way down the beach and go to the real finish line.
Yeah. So for those that are listening, and Nicky, you know now, but the red and the yellow flags are like, is a spot where the people swim. And it's like the safe spot where surfboards or anything hard isn't allowed in. And so we copped a bit of grief for the Hawaiian coming through the middle of the swimmers, but it was all good, you know.
Yeah, we don't have that in Hawaii. I've never seen it before, so that's my excuse.
Yeah. No, it should have been explained, I think, a bit better at the briefing, and we'll explain it again next time better at the briefing. But and I was the same when I came around the corner, I was sort of scanning for the flags, and I saw the red and the yellow, and I'm like, okay, that's not them, because that's where the people swim, because I live here. Whereas just literally probably 200 meters down the beach was the purple and black flag, whatever they were. But Nick, you were that far ahead that Andrew, Oscar, and I, like, by the time we sort of came around the corner, I think you're already on the beach, you know, like you were a good probably kilometer in front of us. It was dominant. It was a dominant display. We're all Oscar, Andrew and I were like, man, this took off. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. And you said after race, you just got a good set and you were just flowing with it, huh?
Yeah. I felt like I didn't have to carve off much. Whereas before, like, you know, when you have a bad race or like lose your rhythm, you have to carve off and reset and find a new bump. And it just felt like I was in the right place. And I don't know if, I don't think that has to do with me. I think just kind of you're in the right place at the right time. So.
Yeah. It all comes down to like the decisions you make. And I feel like that's ocean sports. It's sometimes you can't put a foot wrong. And other times you can't put a foot right. You know, you can't get it right. I feel like, you had a great race the whole time, but I felt like I had a good start at the beginning. I had a good start. I couldn't put a foot wrong. I just kept like the first 2 kilometers. I feel like I was on a set, like riding a bump. And then sort of held it. And then, the rest was history. I sort of lost it. Just momentum lost. I was actually chatting to Andrew after the race and he said he kind of likes coming from behind because he feels like he builds his momentum throughout a race rather than like having a good start. By having a good start, you're at the front and you can't actually see once you're in front, if you took the wrong line, say you went inside and we went outside and we caught up to you, you wouldn't know we caught up to you until we were in line with you, so to speak.
Whereas
by being behind, you can say, okay, I'm going to try inside, I'm losing ground, I'm going to try back outside, I'm gaining ground. So there's that advantage where you kind of can figure that out, which it was an interesting, I'd never even thought of it that way, but Andrew was like, yeah, it's not such a bad thing having a bad start.
Andrew's a competitor for sure. And if you got that dog in you, like he does, you know, you want to hunt people down, you know, it's exciting. Yeah. You're like, I'm going to go and get this guy. You know, and that's like the best part about being an athlete and being competitive. So.
Yeah, for sure. I thoroughly enjoyed the race and, it actually, not so much this one, but in Western Australia, we had sort of, we had good conditions, but it was less swell. It was more like wind chop and more like, not a bay run, but it was like, you need to work harder. It was more of a cardio game. It was like, I'm not sure how you found Padalamua compared to the channel crossings, but personally, I found Padalamua more of a sprint, I guess, more of a cardio game. I had to pump harder to try to get a better
result. Yeah, the end was terrible. I thought, I don't know about you, but I was struggling to get to the finish line for the Padalamua. I made it, but I was like, that's probably the hardest I've had to work.
But even from like the outside, I think because the bump, because we're on the shore rather than between channels, the energy is a bit less. And so I felt like for that distance of a race, we could actually pump faster than the bumps were going. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
So whereas the channel crossing, like, I mean, the top guys were pumping faster than the bumps are going too, I think, but, which is super impressive, but even, you're tapping into the energy more and you're working less hard per kilometer, I guess is the best way to put it. So I did a vlog kind of thing saying it's just the way we want racing to be going, more of the cardio thing. And coming from your background, I'm sure that's how you want it, which I think I totally respect. And I don't think it's wrong. I actually think it's right. But the more I think about it and process it, I think we should have that as fast as you can go is the best, is the fastest. And that's the race. But what do you think of having a secondary kind of race? And we could even have it like you did, we did that race on, or the run on Saturday and then the race on Sunday. What if the run on Saturday was a race, but it was combining speed and surfiness? So there's this John Mann from the Netherlands, his friend has created this leaderboard where it combines speed, but also what he determines as surfiness. So it's like if it's a 10-kilometer run, and you do 10 kilometers, you get 0% score because you literally, the distance you did was the distance you did. It was the straightest line. So But if you do 10 kilometers, if it's a 10 kilometer run and you do 20 kilometers, you've doubled the run, you get 100% score. And that's pretty radical, but like say it's somewhere in between, say it's 15. Yeah. So you get a 50% surf score, so to speak. What do you think if you had a race where, like, obviously it's hard to know what your surf score is, but it wasn't the fastest person that won, but it was the fastest person with the surf score above, say, 40%. Like, do you think that'd be an interesting format?
I need that idea fleshed out a little more. It sounds
so
you just want to be up on foil.
Up on foil, it's encouraging turning and surfing downwind more. So it's
yeah, that would be a totally different thing, though. I would think
it'd be a completely different discipline, and it'd be like, so the race, so it's like, say the race, that's on the best day of wind, but the surfiness race would be the secondary day, and it'd be a combination of distance and speed. Surfiness and distance, I guess, if it makes sense. So it's speed, distance traveled, which ideally you're carving down the coast rather than straight lining down the coast is the idea.
Yeah. Do other, can I relate this? Can we relate this to any other like event? Like, is there a OC1 paddle guys that do something like this?
Nothing in paddling. No, it's completely different. Okay. I think, but I don't know about you, but like you learned through surf foiling, and how do you find your downwind race lines compare to your surf foil lines? Or how do you compare your fun downwind runs to your training downwind runs? Are they the same thing or are they different?
Oh yeah, they're fully different. Yeah. One, I'm just going straight mowing down bumps, and the other one, I'm having fun talking with the boys and just chi-hooing and having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, so we want to try, like, the whole idea of the race is how do we incorporate the fun with the gang rather than straight line. And I don't think there needs to be that, but to grow the community of downwind foilers, I think it would help. I think it'd like the majority of people that are downwind foiling or learning to downwind foil right now probably aren't looking at races thinking, I want to do that one day. They're thinking, I want to downwind so I can surf down the coast. Like if I'm getting into downwind foiling right now, I'm doing it to surf down the coast, not to go as fast as I can down the coast. I think I think that's the majority of people. That's why I got into it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, that's how I got into it too, surfing down the coast. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see a race like this put on and see how it works and how it would be scored or judged or
Simeon, the flow show, did that end up, is that happening? Has that happened?
No, I think the conditions weren't good enough and I forget what happened, but yeah, we never ended up doing that.
Yeah, but I guess that's the essence of it. That's essentially what it is, but the idea is to take out the subjectiveness of who's turning, like to judge it. Pretty tricky, like drone, and like you could miss people. So by taking out that side of things, you can just have it's black and white. It's statistics.
Yeah.
You know? So if we're all using,
no, I think that's I think this is an amazing idea. I think it's a great idea. I just don't think it should be put like in comparison to the M2O race. Whoever won the surf one also, like, you know, you add up the score. I don't think that's
The other ends of the spectrum, they're completely different.
Yeah. Of course. Then that would be awesome. It
could always be the fastest A to B. And the surfiness thing is more about building the community and the stoke, the vibe, it's to build that. And I totally agree that the comment after the race wasn't so much about M2O, especially looking back at now, I can see how it was taken that way, but it wasn't about M2O. M2O is the pinnacle of racing, which is how fast can we go from A to B? The thought was for people getting into the sport, is that the pinnacle of their version of downwind foiling? And
you know,
my view was that it's probably not. you know, because a lot of people will actually be scared off by people that are trying to go as fast as they can down the coast, because all they want to do is surf down the coast or surf down between islands or whatever it is. That was,
yeah.
I can see how it was misconstrued, and it was.
No. Yeah. No, that'd be great. I mean, everyone loves surfing down the coast. So it would be awesome to organize a specific event for that.
It's essentially just a fun run, but you're trying to create some form of competitiveness from it, you know, and having a, I guess we don't need to have a champion for that, but it'd be kind of like, right, I'm competitive, you're competitive. It's nice to sort of say, okay, if I can turn more, and if I use this foil, I'll be able to turn more, but I'll still be able to go fast enough. And you're going to try to get, say you need to get like 30% extra on the run. So 10 Ks, you need 13 kilometers. 10 K A to B, you need 13 kilometers. So you could try to measure it and be like, okay, I need to get to this distance.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go too far over that distance, because then I'm going to, so it's a bit of tactics, it's almost like a bit of chess, which I don't know, as a competitor, I like that. Yeah.
I think making it as objective as possible would be the best, making sure like it's as straightforward. And, you know, when it becomes subjective and people are like, oh, well, that turn was better. And, you know, then it becomes a little bit more complicated to judge. But if you make it as specific and like, okay, you need to do, that's why it's easy to do a downwind race, because, you know, A to B fastest, you know,
exactly.
Something like this is, yeah, ironing out how to get it as specific and objective as possible would be, if you want to make it competitive.
If exactly. And it's, yeah. Whether that's important or not, I think isn't so important, but it's, how do we get people to sign up for a race that they don't want to race in? Because doing like M2O or even, you know, M2M and like the races may be daunting for a lot of people. I know there are a bunch of people learning to downwind in the southern state in Australia, Victoria, who aren't interested in racing because they don't want to go as fast as they can. They want to turn, and if they go as fast as they can, their 45-minute car shuttle each way means they've only got, you know, 20 minutes of foiling, whereas if they surf for as long as they can, they might get an hour. You know, they might triple their time in the water. And I think that's – and Oscar actually did a post the other day, and he was talking about how he's, like, just trying to surf down the coast because he can make a 20-minute run 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's, I think we all think like that, where, you know, it's a three-hour ordeal to shuttle cars, but you want to make the most and go as far out and as far in as you can to get as much foil time as possible. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. So I hope I've explained that right so other people can listen.
No, you did, yeah.
Yeah, and I hope that – I hope we get a bit of momentum, and I'm chatting to John Mann about it too, because his friend has got this app, and you just upload a file, like a GPX file, and it can create, it can calculate your fastest kilometer. It can calculate, what is he calling it? It's like surfiness, or I'll see if I can bring it up actually, because it's pretty interesting. Might be better to explain it. Where it is. So let me share my screen. I think it's a cool thing. So you got your global top 10, so your fastest runs, or first fastest kilometers on run, and then we got Kane at 133, and then you got your global top 10 most surfy, so extra distance, and again, Kane's winning it. But
wow,
55%. So we can probably look at the actual run as well. No, that's not the run. That's his Instagram.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Just as the distance. But yeah, so it has all the different runs that, so Kane, Gabriella, a bunch of group, Hobie's doing it. I think there's even a, Sis Maliko. It'd be cool if you could see, if you clicked on this and you could see the track. I think that'd be the only thing I'd like to see. But then you can go to Hawaii, and you got Hawaii Kai. I think Hobie and Gabriella are the only ones that have uploaded, and John. But kind of a cool little leaderboard just to sort of show you what people are doing on certain runs. So check it out. Anyway, race downwind.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have a few more people got to upload their runs on that. But yeah, that's the idea. That's where the idea came from. And
what's the name of the app? Or shout it out. What's the name of the app?
It's race.downwind.app. So I think it's just a website, but maybe it's an app too, but I'll put it in the notes as well. But yeah, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I also want to talk about a bit of a contentious issue following the race. Josh kind of, you know, put the cat amongst the pigeons, asking if he should disqualify those that didn't wear a life jacket for the Northern Beaches race, because it was a thing we had to wear for insurance, basically. And for the race to happen, we had to say that riders were going to use life jackets. And Nick, you didn't wear a life jacket, but I'm not sure the discussion you had with Josh or what, but you don't have to wear them in Hawaii. And so you weren't going to just buy one for one race. What do you think about that whole topic?
Yeah, well, first off, safety is the most important thing. You know, you don't want someone hurting themselves and, you know, sinking or having any sort of issue with liability. And, you know, you don't want to ruin this sport, the foiling. You want it to keep growing. And, you know, safety is the most important part of that. I will say one of the race organizers kind of nonchalant, I know it was in the rules to wear one, nonchalantly said, oh, you don't need to wear one.
Yeah.
Someone had told us, yeah, you don't need to wear one. And that's why I didn't wear one. I do have one.
Which is important information to know. Like if a race official says you don't need to wear one, then you wouldn't expect to be disqualified after the fact of the race happening. So that's important.
Yeah. I won't say who. You don't need to wear one. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. And then what was I going to say? Oh yeah. Just about being in Hawaii, you know, like, we don't wear them in Hawaii. A lot of people don't wear them in Hawaii. It's not because we disregard safety. It's, we grow up, we're around watermen and we become watermen, and you understand the risks and the safety and the environment before you step out there and do a Hawaii Kai run. You know, you're not just going to go, me and Simeon, we talked about this a lot, but, you know, we know what we're getting into. We understand the situation, the danger. It's part of the culture, I would say, being Hawaiian. And not saying safety is not important. We're not throwing that out the window. It's just kind of understanding the situation we're putting ourselves in and understanding what the worst case scenario and things that can happen. But yeah, no, safety is the most important thing. And I'll wear one next time to make sure.
Yeah. And I think I think it's totally fair. Like for me, I feel like I don't need to wear a life jacket every single run, but I do my best to, because people look at me and what I do, they do. Like we're leaders in the sport, and it's more that if someone learning sees that I'm not wearing a life jacket, then they're like, well, I don't need to wear a life jacket. And in some ways that's completely wrong, because I've been in the ocean doing ocean sports for pretty much my whole life and downwind paddling offshore for 10 years, you know? So whether I wear a life jacket or not is based on my experience, which is exactly what you're saying, Nick. It's based on the experience that I've accumulated over time. And I make a call on that depending on the situation that I'm in. For someone that's new, that's into the sport, who has zero experience offshore paddling or foiling, I don't think you have the right you don't have the experience to make the call, basically. And I think that's exactly what you're saying, Nick. Like if you're out there and, you know, and it's a big day, yeah, I'll wear a life jacket. And I think for me that's the safest thing. But if it's a 10 knot, you know, basically flat ocean, it is not zero risk, but it's a much smaller risk for me. And I can make the call whether on based on a bunch of different factors. In saying that, I do, if I've got a life jacket in my car and I haven't forgotten it, I do try to put it on because I like the pockets. I think the pockets are really handy. Also, if I'm getting filmed, I always try to wear a life jacket, because I feel like getting filmed is like promoting the sport, and promoting the sport it's a part
setting
of
setting a good example.
Which, you know, and I totally see why. Like I see both sides of it, but I think it is important that, like even leg ropes, you know, and for me, it comes from a bit of a different place, because I was in Hood River for a SUP race pre-COVID, and there was a paddler there. I didn't know him, but there was a paddler there who was competing in the race coming up that weekend, and he actually drowned because he wasn't wearing a leg rope and he wasn't wearing a life jacket. He also wasn't a very good swimmer. It was the reports he should have been wearing both. And like to have someone pass away, yeah, in an area that you're doing a race was pretty rattling. You know, I didn't know the guy, but I knew people that knew him, and it was so for me, it's always like, well, if I can save one life because I wear a life jacket, that's bigger than anything else. So that's where it comes from me. But for me, that's what it hits home a little more because of that. But yeah, I think it's a good discussion to have on safety.
It is a good, I mean, safety is, you know, I'm not going to disregard it and say it's not important. So yeah, it is important, especially if you're, you know, not a good swimmer and not knowing the waters and understanding the situation you're putting yourself in. Yeah. You got to wear a life jacket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And look, here it's always a funny one too, because, again, from the SUP days, if we were doing a surf race in and out through the waves, you didn't have to wear one, because the idea was if you're having to go under a wave, you don't want to be wearing a life jacket. But then if you're offshore, you should be wearing one because you're not going under waves, was the idea. But it's a weird one. Like, it's a gray area. Like, some people hate them, some people use them all the time, and it's the biggest
thing.
They
make good ones. Yeah, they make good ones that don't really get in the way. I don't know if yours feels like you get in the way, but like,
no, mine doesn't. I like mine. Yeah, like I said, I wear mine because I like the pockets. You know, it's like, it's convenient. I always laugh at Simeon because he's always got his bum bag, and he's got his selfie stick, and he's got his, and I'm like, man, he's gonna get like a life jacket. And it's like, everything's there. But in some places, some people complain about the extra heat that a life jacket can create. So wearing that padded foam can, I'm not gonna encourage people to have excuses for not wearing life jackets, but they can be hot. So that's why some people don't like them. But I wear them all the time. I won't say every single time, but as often as I go out of my way to get my life jacket, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the biggest issue with the reason I wanted to bring it up was because the biggest issue was the official saying it, don't worry about it, and then another official asking if they should be disqualified. And I think the whole point of Josh's post was to highlight safety, have a discussion around safety like we are now. And that was all it was. It wasn't meant to.
No, I didn't take it the wrong way. I didn't really care.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, safety, yeah.
You already walked home with a $750 check. They weren't taking it off, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a discussion with Josh about this because he wanted to have prize money for the race. Was the prize money a factor for you coming over to Australia for the race?
Yeah, I'll say it was. Yeah. I mean, it's always nice. I honestly didn't think I was going to win. But just being like having an event that's official and has prize money, and it's a little more exciting to be like, oh, I could win something, you know?
Yeah.
And that is a factor, especially coming from Hawaii.
Sure.
A longer distance to travel, and you know, you might have deals as well with your sponsors if you get top in certain races as well. So those are factors, and yeah, money is always a factor. You know,
I'm glad because I was saying to Josh, I'm like, I'm not sure it's a factor for like that many people, you know, and like only, you know, realistically only the top three get any money. So it's like, you know, if 10 people fly in, 7 could be upset they didn't walk away with money, and it's obviously you can't be upset, it's a race. But I'm glad that the money helped assist you coming over for the race, because that was the whole goal of it. If we have a prize money, then it credibility, bit of pocket money, you know.
I would have came either way though. It was, I mean, a chance to go to Australia and foil, and my girlfriend came with me, you know, we hung out and you know, got to do some sightseeing. So yeah, we made a trip out of it. So
yeah. So yeah, I saw you went to the zoo. You see fish and stuff, and
yeah. My girlfriend's a vet tech, so she loves animals.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, whether it be Japan, Europe, in this case Australia, she was like, okay, we need to see koalas, we need to see kangaroos, and we got to pet them, hold them, feed them, and that gives me some brownie points, you know, and she's shuttling us for the rides. You know, I give her a little bit of what she wants in exchange for some shuttles.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the balance, man. I know it well. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
the shuttles aren't for free. That's for sure.
Yeah, she's awesome. She was a champ, especially for us driving on the opposite side of the road. It was a little confusing, and yeah. Got out of the airport, I was like, "Whoa!" Like trying to figure out how they do this, and then they just gave me a car. I had never driven on that side of the road, and a Hawaii license was good enough. And I was like, "I think you guys should like teach us how or say something."
Yeah. Well, it's the same for us Aussies when we go over there. I've definitely driven through like a set of traffic lights and come through on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
I was in Maui and actually with my old SUP sort of brand sponsor JP, and I was driving and I know we were going to get lunch or something, and we pulled out of like by the harbor, and I pulled into the wrong, like the oncoming traffic. There's no cars coming, luckily. And I just, cause there was a gas station. So I pulled in, I sort of went in like from the wrong side of the road, and they were like, they were freaking out.
But it's
just like a lapse in concentration in a quiet road is harder than a busy road, I feel like.
Yeah. Cause you can just follow cars on a busy road. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So
it was complicated our first couple hours.
Yes. Especially that coming from the airport to I guess the Northern Beaches is a bit to navigate, I guess. There's a bit of traffic. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But we loved it. Everyone was so nice. Australia was awesome. Yeah, we want to come back for sure.
I was so stoked that you guys came out for two reasons. One, you could see what we, you know, how like our downwind conditions, but also it legitimized like what we're doing and the racing that we're doing. And I don't know, hopefully it's an annual thing, this race, and hopefully get conditions like we did all the time, because last year we had a race the exact opposite. We went from Avalon from in a northerly instead of a southerly wind. So we get that all the time. Like normally we get you're actually lucky that you had like the 5 days you're here, the wind was the same way. Normally we get wind like 3 days, wind one way, and then sort of no wind, and then wind the other way for 2 days, and then wind back the other way. So it's like it's you guys always, you know, the reverse runs that I guess you guys get rarely, we get like weekly here in Australia. Wow. Yeah, so it's really different.
It's so rare for us here to have a, it's like a novelty thing to do.
Yeah. It's actually just the other day, a bunch of us did a run from basically Avalon back to where Long Reef, and then a cold front came through, southerly change, and we literally waited for the wind bumps. So basically a shuttle to stand wind that we went one way and then waited like half an hour and then went back the other way. Like all
no
in one
way.
Yeah. Which is pretty cool, right? Like it's the dream. But that's happened twice actually in the last 2 weeks. So it's just sort of the time of year. Yeah,
that would never happen in Hawaii.
No, it'd be really hard to do. Yeah. Anything else that you want to talk about, Nick? I feel like I've enjoyed the chat, but anything you want to bring up that I guess we haven't covered?
I'm excited for this year. I think there's going to be even more. I just see more and more foilers, probably in Australia too, but in Hawaii, there's just tons of people picking up SUP foiling, and their big goal is the M2O or, you know, the M2M, and just do that series. And
yeah.
I thought this sport was going to plateau, and it's still just growing exponentially. And we have the Florence brothers now being part of it. And they're secret sending all the time. And I'm like, oh, they might jump in these races, and that would exponentially blow up our already exponential sport.
Yeah. And do you think, for me, I love downwind foiling more than surf foiling, not because of, I feel like they're pretty similar to me, but in terms of like promoting something, I prefer to promote downwind foiling because the more people that downwind, the more lifts, the more shuttles, and it's not going to make a spot busier, you know, like a downwind run. I haven't yet experienced a downwind run, except for maybe Molokai to Oahu with all the boats. There hasn't been a downwind run where there's too many people out there, you know,
it's
more the merrier at this
point. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take 10 seconds to get up behind the next person, you're so far apart already.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You have the whole ocean. So yeah, I always encourage people to downwind, because instead of surfing for 20 seconds, they're surfing for 30 minutes, and it's just mind blowing. You can just surf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. That's it. It's that surfy downwind. That's the whole reason that discussion earlier about the percentage and the surfiness versus speed. I think there's something there. I think we should try to maybe when we're in Hawaii. I'm actually coming over in June. I'll chat to John Hearn and see if we can organize like a Hawaii kayak.
Are you staying till July, the races?
Yeah. I'm going to stay till July. So I'll do like a month early. Pumped. I'll be on Maui, but I'll definitely be trying to get over to Oahu at least once or twice. Yeah.
Your kids coming? Family coming too?
Yeah, the whole family. So I'm stoked because last year they didn't come. So this year I'm like, well, let's make a trip of it. And we can just, do like a bit of a family holiday and it'll be less intense, like less just like race training. And it'll be hopefully by June, all the hard work should be done. Right. And then just be enjoying the few downwind runs and a bit of family time. Should be nice. And that should be good.
Oh, it's awesome. You're bringing your family. That's the best part of it.
It's a dream. Yeah. Like it's a dream come true. They came in 2023 and 2024. I thought it'd be, it was fine last year too. It was great. But it's just different, you're having the call and FaceTime and having the family there it's going to be great. So I can't wait.
Yeah.
This year.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the season. I'm excited to see who's going to show up at our races. I mean, I hope some big names show up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think let's talk about that. So 2023, I think we had like 50 foilers or 60 foilers. 2024, we had like 100 foilers. Like I'm talking downwind, or like 80 foilers downwinders. Or no, maybe like 90 actually. There are a lot. Anyway, it's almost doubled from 2023 to 2024. Do you think it's going to double again? Like, is it going to get like? Are we getting 120 this year? 140.
That's for M2O. You're talking about specifically?
I guess all the races. I'm just talking M2O. I think they should probably max it. But like for M2O, I think do you think, I guess the reason I ask this is because I think in Hawaii, you're going to get a lot of people who want to do the race and it's easier for you to do the race if you're in Hawaii than if you're from Europe or Australia. But I think a lot of people from overseas or not from Hawaii sort of had M2O or M2M or those races as a bit of a bucket list item and they've done it now. And I question how many are going to come back and do it again. And you know what I mean? I was sort of concerned after chatting to a few people who did it. They're like, maybe I probably can't afford to do it next year because I wanted to do it.
It's expensive.
So I guess the answer probably is that if there's more people in Hawaii doing it, then it's just going to have more locals doing it and less internationals doing it potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just I can't imagine like 3 weeks. 2 weeks. You have to be here at least if you don't. Yeah, and then place to stay, flights to Maui, flights to like to Molokai, and it's a whole ordeal. I hope more people. I think at least more locals. I know. I don't know about the other markets and the other places, but I know more locals are going to be out there for sure.
That's good. That's I think the most important thing because I think if the locals are doing it, it grows it just as well as international people doing it, and I hope that the international people have their own races that become big enough that it's like a Molokai to Oahu, like or an equivalent, like just a good local race, like we had here in Sydney, So I hope more races pop up. And
did you see the Corzon race? You kind of have a flag next to where the country they're from. And from Molokai to Oahu, there's like one or two French flags. And I saw the Corzon race and it was like 100 France flags. French flags. And I'm, oh my God, there's so many people out here that are potential racers. I mean, they are racers over there, but I'm not part of that world. So.
Yeah, exactly. I think, there's a whole, it's so cool. It's so cool right now. I love where downwind foiling is at the moment. And I hope we continue to grow it in a way that encourages more people to continue doing it is I guess the best way to phrase it. I think, like you said, I'm super excited. I did like a rankings, which was more just to sort of get people excited talking about it, and like have their and, like get try to get more people to races, and get more people like wanting to travel for races. I got a bit of advice from people, and we've actually created a bit of a committee. I need to do a call to sort of finalize a few things, but we want to basically get like a list of races for each year. And I'm already behind the eight ball, but I just used races from last year. But I want to get a list of races from for each year, and sort of have it so that people have it on their radar, so that it's easy to find a cool race to do, rather than at the moment it's, you know, M2O is the most well-known one, but there's races, like there's a race in Guadeloupe last weekend, the race, and there was a race in Sydney 2 weekends ago. There's race since posting, a guy said there's a race in Florida, and they do like a 20K downwinder, because I mentioned about the Florida Surf Race League. And I was like, oh, he goes, that's not downwind. He goes, we've got a 20K downwind race here. So I didn't know about it. And so having the conversation puts them on the map. And then we, you know, maybe if I'm doing a trip to Florida, I'll try to time it for the race, you know, and that's what I'm excited about for sure.
Yeah. I hear about a lot of these races after they've been run, like the Guadalupe one. Yeah. I didn't know about it until after like media was posted about it.
Yeah. I want it to be known beforehand and get as many of like I want more Hawaii things to happen other than Hawaii, because at the moment it's epic that everyone goes to Hawaii, but it's just 1 month or 1 week of the year, you know?
Yeah. So
if we can have, you know, like you guys came down to Sydney, you made it more legitimate. You guys went over to Crozon and you made that, like, you know, not you, but like the Hawaiian crew. And so it just makes it, it's just, I don't know, it makes a bit of a, like a circuit, and it makes it like you sort of got your downwind foil family, and you can just sort of go to different races and experience different things and drop out on all the gear and the conditions and have cool experiences.
Yeah, no, we're definitely blessed. I'm always so grateful to just go travel with my friends and foil, and just, it's the coolest thing in the world.
Actually, I didn't even ask. So what are your plans for this year?
I'm going to most of the races. I have a budget to go to France, to Gorge, to, I hope they change the Gorge race. I think it's during the M2O week. But but yeah, obviously Oahu, and then yeah, France, Oregon, all of the, I think the main bigger races I'm going to.
So. Are you going to come to Western Australia? It's like,
is there a race over there?
Yeah. So there's a week where we have about four races, and I actually just got a call from one of the event organizers the other day, and basically there's the West Coast Downwinder. This is November, so middle of November through to the first week of December. So put in your diary. There's the West Coast Downwinder is the big one, but there's also midweek races called the Triple S. So it's the Sunset Surf Ski Series. They include foilers. Last year we had like 30 or 40 foilers in that race, in the small ones, and like close to 50 for the West Coast Downwinder. I might be rounding up. But there was like we had a fun run where we had 80 foilers sort of. Wow. And it was just like, we didn't count. We counted on we filmed it, and we just had like a bit of a fun run. But yeah, November in Perth, Western Australia, it's probably the furthest away for most people. It's far enough away for us, even on the East Coast. But it's consistent wind. They get they call it the doctor. So trade winds that blow south, southwest, and it's always the same direction. And so that, there's two big races, the West Coast Downwinder and the doctor. The doctor is from an island, just about 20 Ks offshore, and you downwind from the island back to the mainland. And we haven't been allowed in the race the last couple of years because it's predominantly a surf ski race, but I just had a call from the event organizer, and they're basically opening it up to foilers this year. So it's going to be a really, basically there's two good 30 to 35 kilometer races that are going to be on in a week's.
You should hopefully they post enough to remind me during the month before, so I can plan it. But my girlfriend would love to go there. That's apparently, yeah.
Your girlfriend would love the quokkas, and you've got to Google it, but they're like these little, like mini kind of mini kangaroos slash wombat sort of looking things, like possums almost. But you could, they're like, people get selfies with them. They only live on this island called Rottnest Island. And it's,
no way.
Yeah, they're the cool, they're like almost, they're kind of big rats in some.
Yeah.
but they're super cute. And Rottnest Island's a cool place to, if you're in Perth, you should go to Rottnest Island for sure.
Okay, good to know.
So now you got an excuse to come over and see the quokkas, and maybe it'll line up with a certain race. Who knows?
Yeah.
So that's the other one you got to add to your calendar for sure. WA Race Week. So I think it's like 10 days of racing. If you come for 10 days, there's 5 races.
Good to know.
So we have great to get calendar. We also have you if you come over. I think so you're looking at France, obviously. Saint-Tropez probably is on the radar after last year's conditions. And Crozon, I can't get unlucky twice in a year, but back-to-back years, hopefully. Fingers crossed for good conditions there. There's actually a race in Barcelona in May if you're looking for places to go. I'll post it in the notes for this podcast, but it's part of the Euro Tour, and Xavi from Spain, he said there's two races that are consecutive weekends where he's trying to get people to fly in for both races, basically. So I don't know, but there's plenty of racing going on. We just got to get there. So which is cool.
You
got a busy year. You have to go because I can't go to everything because I got the kids.
Oh, exciting. Maybe.
Well, I don't know. I think we wrap up, but anything you want to leave everyone with? Any words of wisdom?
Just start foiling. It's the best thing ever. Yeah. It's awesome. Get to see the world, get to have a great community. That's it. Love it.
Yeah. Perfect.
But thanks for having me. And this is awesome. Keep doing what you're doing, promoting the sport. Like everyone knows James Casey podcast. And
I gotta get it going again. Been a little while, but it was a good excuse to get you on and chat to you more, and I'm excited to hear you're looking to go to a bunch of places to race, and I'm excited to come over to your hometown and do some racing too. And as you said, I'm excited for this year.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thanks, Nick. I'll chat soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, sounds good. Excellent. All right, have a good one. Thanks for having me.